the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Glad to be broadcasting you live from Louisville, Kentucky. Folks, very glad to be talking today about a big question that's being asked by a lot of Christians, and that comes down to this. Should Christians pay taxes after Obamacare? I wrote a big article about it at albertmohler.com, posted it yesterday. I've gotten a lot of response. And it should be an interesting conversation. There are many people who are asking very, very basic questions about what it means for Christians to face the moral responsibility of paying taxes and all that in light of the implications of Obamacare with abortion. Folks, the phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll get to that topic in just a moment. First, to review some other issues in the news. Big news coming out, of course, of West Virginia, Montcoal, West Virginia. The death toll in a mine blast there now has reached 25 persons, making it the worst mining accident in the United States in the last 25 years. There are still four miners missing as of the latest reports. Folks, if you just look at the grief on the faces of those folks in West Virginia, you see something of the absolute horror of imagining your loved ones in a subterranean mine explosion that they already know has killed 25 people. The worst before this was on December the 19th, 1984, when 27 workers were killed at the Wilberg mine in Orangeville, Utah. You're looking at an entire section of the United States of America, unknown to many people, just in terms of what's on your daily concerns, that would pass through Pennsylvania, Ohio, West Virginia, and, of course, much of Kentucky, having to do with where there are miners involved every single day and in much of the night in harvesting coal for America's energy. And these coal miners are working under very, very difficult circumstances in places where human beings were not meant to be. And the danger is obvious. The danger of the buildup of toxic gases and explosive gases becomes apparent in a disaster like this. And I can just guarantee you that there are entire communities throughout Appalachia that are very much right now feeling the direct pain of this disaster. And all Americans should take note. You're looking at a death toll here of 25 people. That is just a small reminder of how many families are involved, how many loved ones are involved. Every one of those 25 dead miners and four still missing is missed and loved by many. And it is just a matter of genuine grief to see these families suffering so much as they're wondering about the fate of some of those who still remain. Folks, there are some interesting things in the news. No doubt you have seen some of these. The release of Apple's much-vaunted iPad over the past weekend led to a great deal of media attention. I had to tweet as actually the opening the question, which is getting more cultural notice on this Good Friday weekend and Easter weekend? Is it the release of the iPad or is it the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead? In terms of America's commercial markets, there's no doubt the iPad had the preeminent concern. There are now sales reports out, and this is somewhat unusual for Apple because Apple is very, very tight on this kind of statistic. But even as the reports are coming out, it looks like 300,000 first-day sales of the iPad took place. You know, folks, I'm getting lots of questions just about the technology. The ethics of technology for Christians is a very big question. How much technology do we need? How do we relate to this technology? To what degree do these social technologies change us? The reality is that I think the iPad is going to be much like the iPhone. It's going to be a game changer because what happened with the iPhone is that the content providers began to determine this is the future, and thus the content was directed toward the iPhone. And because of that, well, the iPhone is now becoming more or less just a staple of America's technological culture. I think the iPad is going to be very similar. I am the proud owner of a Kindle, an even prouder owner of many, many books. But even as I love books, reading on the Kindle has become a very important part of my day. And my guess is in a period of short order, the iPad is going to be that for many, many Americans because the content is going to go there. And it is an elegant, beautiful, cool machine. Apple seems to be very adept at that. And before long, what is powerful and elegant and cool ingratiates itself into our lives in ways that, well, people are just going to find that the iPad is a rather constant companion or something very similar to it. And it's just a reminder to us that in the technological world we live in, what is today's technology can become old very fast. One of the interesting things I read over the last several days had to do with the fact that if you watch movies or television reruns today, things are more dated by technology, think about this, folks, than by dress. It used to be when you would look at an older movie or an older television program, you would say, those people, that's so 80s or that's so 90s, the way people are dressed. But now it has to do with their technology. Look at the computer on the desk. Look at what they're carrying. Is it an iPod or a Walkman? Are you looking at a clunky game machine or something that's inherently cool? You look back at some of the coolest movies, the biggest blockbuster movies of the 90s and even the early part of this decade, and they are extremely dated by the technology that people have at hand, on the desk, in the home. And, of course, that's just likely to accelerate as we go forward. Very interesting article looking not to the future, but looking backwards in the New York Times today. The headline is, In Syria, a Prologue for Cities. It has to do with the fact that a major excavation there at Tell Zidan is uncovering one of the most ancient cities ever to be excavated in the world, and it is there in Syria. What's interesting is that these archaeologists from the Oriental Institute at the University of Chicago are in Syria largely because the war in Iraq and Afghanistan has forced many of these scholarly archaeologists out of that region, and they're now in Syria, where it turns out there was a great deal to be found. One of the interesting things about this, of course, from a Christian perspective, is that the Bible takes a very interesting perspective on cities. As you go all the way back to the book of Genesis, and that's what makes this so interesting, of course, they're dating this city and the artifacts in the city to about 4200 B.C., The book of Genesis takes a view of the city that the city is a place of concentrated evil, of concentrated human ambition. And you'll remember that Lot, rather than Abraham, chose the cities of the plain. And you'll remember in the book of Genesis what happened to Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities of the plain. In the New Testament, cities take on a different perspective. Cities become the centers of missiological focus. You look at the letters of Paul. They are most commonly identified by the city to which they were written. Corinth, Rome, Philippi, Thessalonica. And because of that, what you have is a very, very interesting phenomenon of the city being transformed from a place that is first of all seen as a concentration of human evil and depravity. From a Great Commission understanding of the city as a place of concentrated people in need of the gospel. And that's a very, very interesting transformation. I found this article very interesting in the New York Times. By the way, it makes some very interesting comments that just tells you how archaeologists work. For instance, they discovered in this ancient tell or excavation site many ceramic seals, seals that will be on bottles and on doors and things. Listen to this. To archaeologists, a seal is not just a seal. Dr. Zettler, one of the archaeologists, said it signifies that, quote, somebody has the authority to restrict access to things, to close and seal jars, bags, doors. So once you have those seals, you must have had social stratification. Well, there you have it. Archaeologists are looking for evidence of the fact that that human societies were organized, and in a city, because of the concentration of people, you've got to make that organization happen. Folks, I tweeted another article over the weekend that really had my attention. Came up yesterday. Has to do with the burden of paying for a wedding. Now, the point of this article in the New York Times is that it's becoming more and more a family affair, not just a matter of the parents of the bride, but for that matter, of the bridegroom and of others as well, because the cost of weddings is escalating so, and quite frankly, with the breakdown of the family, it gets more and more complicated. The point of this article by Abby Ellen was that just arranging a wedding these days in a city like New York City can be absolutely atrocious. You get all the people in the room, and you now have not only brides and brides' mothers to worry about, according to this article, but bridegrooms and bridegrooms' mothers as well. Well, that's not my interest. I'll tell you what my interest is. The average American wedding, according to this article, not just in New York City, this is coast to coast, north to south, east to west, the average American wedding is now costing north of $28,000. Folks, that's nuts. That's absolutely nuts. I'll tell you, as I work with young people, one of the things I hear is that you'll find young couples who will say, we can't afford to be married. They don't really mean they can't afford to live as a married couple. They mean they can't afford the wedding. And folks, it is a sick society, a very sick society, that prices weddings out of the range of young people who are the most desperately in need of getting married. And it's a right and righteous thing that they do so. And woe unto the society that has made the wedding such a matter of narcissistic self-celebration that you think you have to spend tons of money in order to make a social statement. You know, let's just get the record clear. You don't have to have all the stuff people think you have to have for a wedding. And quite frankly, just about anybody could afford a wedding that means a wedding dress, folks dressing up, going to the church, and having nuts and mints and wedding cake, punch, in a reception afterwards. That's what weddings were like when I was growing up. Now, $28,000 on average. You know, folks, that used to be the cost of a house. Even today, that would be the down payment on a house, much less a wedding. We're going to come back to talk about a question that many Christians are asking. Given the implications of Obamacare, given the issue of abortion, given our commitment to the sanctity of human life, should Christians pay taxes? Give me a call, 877-893-8255. We'll be right back on the Albert Mohler Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The issue of paying taxes is one that Christians have faced in every generation from the time of Christ, but there is a particular angle that has caught the attention of a good many Christians right now, and that has to do with the Obamacare legislation that is now passed. I got lots of questions on this, so a lot of folks were writing me saying, should we pay taxes? Or I had people saying, I don't plan to pay my taxes. I plan, if there's going to be any abortion implication to the Obamacare legislation, to make clear that I will not support this by paying my taxes. I published a big article entitled Render Unto Caesar on Paying Taxes After Obamacare at my website at albertmohler.com. And folks, I'll tell you, I believe this is a very, very important issue. And if it is not one that you or your friends or family have been asking, I guarantee you, you're likely to be in the circle of others who have been asking the question. Let me cut to the bottom line. Yes, we must pay our taxes. Jesus was clear about this. Paul was clear about this. But there is a moral complexity to every issue, and it's important that we think this through. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I tried to set out the case as best I understand it from the scripture. Jesus was very clear about the obligation to pay taxes, but his argument was very interesting. He didn't say, yes, just pay your taxes. He said, literally, taking the coin whose picture's on it, and he said, render unto Caesar those things that are Caesar's, and under God the things that are God's. You know, even as that means on the one hand, yes, Caesar is owed our taxes, it also means on the other hand, Caesar is not owed our souls. Our souls bear the imprint of the image of God, not the imprint of the image of Caesar. The Apostle Paul is very clear about this as well in Romans chapter 13, saying that we are to give taxes to whom tax is due, custom to whom custom is due, honor to whom honor is due. There is a responsibility that God has invested in government. It is a blessing to have government. It is a curse not to have government. But when it comes to paying taxes, we need to be reminded of the fact that Jesus didn't give us any out in this. And we read in the Apostle Paul and in the Apostle Peter an explanation of why it's so. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We are glad to hear from you also by email. Write us at mail at albertmohler.com. And at Twitter, /Albert Mohler and Mohler Radio, at Facebook, the Albert Mohler Program. You know, there's a great deal to this question, isn't there? Because first of all, there's the whole issue of taxation. Boy, does that have a big role to play in American history. There's the issue of Christian responsibility to the government. There is, of course, our preeminent concern for the glory of God and obedience to God. And, of course, that means respect for the sanctity of human life. It is a morally abhorrent thing that any nation would allow abortion, much less fund it. And one of the things we know is that with this Obamacare health care legislation now passed, the executive order signed by the president is an inadequate, let's just say at the very least, it is an inadequate protection for human life. And there is every reason to believe that in short order, the result of this legislation will be that there will be at least tax subsidy for at least some abortions, which means that we are morally complicit as American citizens, insofar as our tax monies are used to perform even one government abortion. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Let's go to Matt calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Matt. What are you thinking?
Yes, Dr. Mohler, one thing we have to be careful about when we talk about render under Caesar is the fact that we live in a constitutional democracy, and Caesar is what we call we the people, and constitutional law rules overall. So I think that before we focus on, you know, 4 years down the road paying these taxes, we need to go to the courtrooms, and we need to make sure that the federal government submits to the Constitution. And I believe the 10th Amendment is broken in many places in this legislation.
You know, there are going to be a lot of questions about that, Matt, and you have at least, I think it's now 12 attorneys general of the states filing joint and common legal claims against it, and I have no idea where that's going to go. I will tell you that just as a footnote, I think the individual mandate is a clear violation of states' rights and federalism. But where that goes from here, I don't know. And I'm not able to offer legal analysis. The issue, though, you raised, Matt, about Caesar being the people, there's a very legitimate point there when you have a constitutional republic where the government governs by the consent of the people. The problem with that is that we then have to live with the decisions of the people, and elections have consequences, and that's a point about this as well. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. There are a good number of Christians who are asking the question, how do we think about this? And one of the things I want you to think about, by the way, is that the situation we face now is basically pro-life, conservative Christians saying, how can we pay taxes if this is how the government's going to use the money? That question was asked in times past, at least during, say, the 70s and the 80s, by people on the evangelical and theological left, for instance, who were pushing for a nuclear freeze or against nuclear weapons, who were making the very same argument. But the point here is that neither Peter nor Paul, nor, more importantly, Jesus, as Jesus spoke to rendering under Caesar, gives us any kind of authorization to decide when we will and will not pay taxes. Instead, the Apostle Paul makes very clear that we are to pay taxes because they are due, and it's a part of understanding that God has given us the institution of government for our good, and that there is a proper accountability we have to the government. The government cannot claim our souls, but the government can claim taxes. And very similarly, Peter, writing to the church, says that we are to live before the world in such a way that we honor those who are in authority, because what should not be said of Christians is that we do not recognize proper authority. We can hardly give adequate testimony to the authority of God and to the power of the gospel if we are trying to subvert lawful human authority at the same time. There are limits to the power of government. Again, the government cannot claim the soul. Jesus did make very clear not only that we are to render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, but Jesus made equally clear that we are to render under God and to God alone the things that are God's. Let's go to Orlando, Florida. Bob's listening on WTLN. Go ahead, Bob.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. I want to take a, and I disagree with you slightly. I understand what your point is, and I don't disagree with your point. However, and I called in some time ago about this, and that was, if we are forced as Christians to compromise our Christian moral principles as laid out in the Bible, such as the Ten Commandments and so on and so forth, though we're not under the law, but should we still be bound to Caesar if Caesar is asking us to go against the kingdom of God? And the second point that I was going to make is, along the same line, is if they told, you know, Caesar told the disciples to quit preaching and quit preaching, and they kept preaching and they kept preaching. So they were in violation of the law too, in a roundabout way.
Yeah, no, in a very direct way. Your point's extremely well taken, Bob. They said right to the face, and by the way, that was to the Jewish Sanhedrin. Just to make clear, in Acts chapter 4, what they were saying is that they're willing to go to jail. And that's why in my article I point out the example of Daniel. Daniel was willing to be thrown into the lion's den. He refused the edict that he must bend the knee to an idol. And that's where I would suggest we have the distinction, Bob, is that that when Jesus says render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, he very clearly said yes, taxes, but he said no, not your soul. And that's where, yes, we should be willing to go to jail if indeed we are commanded by government to false worship, to idolatry, or to something very tantamount to that. But let's remember, when Jesus said we are to render unto Caesar that which is his, the coin, the tax, he was speaking about Caesar, who was by definition already, by his oppression of the Jewish people, understood to be a deeply evil, tyrannical ruler involved in deeply evil, murderous things. The phone number is 877-893-8255. We'll be right back with your calls on the Albert Mueller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Lots of email on this. Let me just share with some of this. Linda wrote in to say, I'd already figured out what my opinion was before I read your column. I pay my taxes according to the law in good faith. The government uses my tax money for evil purposes. The sin will not be on my head. That's an essential part of the argument. Yes, the government will give an answer. And Caesar himself will one day give an answer, so will every earthly ruler. Someone said here, and by the way, several followed this line of argument. And I knew this was coming. I braced myself for it, and I knew it was going to hit, and it did. And this is going to have to be a different program. A lot of people are saying, look, if we follow your logic, there would never have been an American Revolution. Well, you know, that's a very interesting question, a very, very interesting question. And it's a sophisticated question in terms of how we have to think about it, because the American Revolution was not a revolution led by people who said we will not pay our taxes. It was not. It was led by people who said we will pay our taxes only to a just and lawful authority. So the question of the American Revolution was not over paying taxes. It was over who was the legitimate authority to whom the tax was due. And by the way, that's a convoluted argument, a complex argument. And just about every fall, I get ready for that argument, because I get lots of 7th and 8th graders writing me in about that, because at least in some school systems, by some curricula, that's a question they're supposed to be answering. Should Christians have supported the American Revolution? I think it's probably a good one for us to have a program on sometime, because I'm holding in my hand a good many who are asking that question right here. Others wrote in to say, yes, I basically agree. We have to pay our taxes. But we also should be very, very active in the political sphere as citizens to make sure our taxes are spent rightly. And that's absolutely true. That's a point I emphatically make in my article. You'll find at albertmohler.com. The article, again, is entitled Render Unto Caesar on Paying Taxes After Obamacare. The point I make is, again, that we have political means available to us. And I think that's a very important issue. So we must avail ourselves of those political means. J.C. Doggett wrote an article I cited in my essay. He says this: Paul gives no support to Christian citizens who might be minded to hold back part of their tax liability because they disapprove of the way in which the government might spend the money, or because they doubt its fairness. In happier times than Paul's, Christians nowadays are free to pursue their objections by political means. And we not only can do that, we should and must do that. Lance wrote in on Facebook to say, I'd imagine the Romans did a lot of things with tax revenue of which Jews and Christians alike disapproved. Jesus said to give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar. He didn't qualify it based upon our moral approval, what the state does with our money. No, that's absolutely true. And let's remember that a part of what the Roman state did with its money was crucify Christ. That's a very important and sobering thing to remember here. Chris wrote in on Facebook to say, given that Jesus told his disciples to render unto Caesar, I'm not sure how a Christian can avoid paying taxes. Somehow I doubt that the Roman Empire used the taxes it collected for purely moral efforts. Well, somehow I'm absolutely sure you're right, Chris. Many others wrote in to say some similar things. I'll tell you, I got some vitriolic letters against my argument. And yet the arguments they offered were ones that that, in my view, just directly run contrary to the command of Christ. This is one of those commands that certainly has our attention, doesn't it? I mean, Jesus said clearly, and let's remember that as Jesus is speaking here in the Gospel of Mark, he was being challenged by those who were seeking to entrap him. They were seeking to put him into a political trap when they said, should Christians pay the tax or not? And Jesus said, give me the coin. Whose picture is on the coin? That's Mark chapter 12, that is, verse 17. He says, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's and to God the things that are God's. You know, that cuts both ways, doesn't it? Jesus here is telling his people, the church, look, Caesar loves that coin so much he put his picture on it. When he put his picture on it, he was saying that he owns it. So if you're going to use Caesar's money, you're going to have to give it back to him when he demands it in taxes. But he doesn't own your soul. That whole issue of the image is so important, because after all, Jesus was affirming the entire knowledge gained to us in the Word of God that every single human being has a soul that bears the very stamp, the image of God. We are made in the image of God. Caesar has no right to demand our souls. He has no right to demand our ultimate allegiance. He has no right to demand our worship. But our taxes, Jesus was saying, that's a small thing. That's a small thing. You know, the big background to this is the fact that we understand as Christians, as we're obligated to accept the Scriptures, the Word of God, we come to understand that government is one of God's divinely ordained gifts to humanity. Even a bad government, according to the Scripture, is better than no government at all. We gladly have political means to make things better. The phone number is 877-893-8255. We'll be back with more on the Albert Miller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Miller Program. Paying taxes, a big issue. No one likes it. And hey, we're here in the part of April where everybody's got it very much on the mind. The issue immediately before us has to do with the passage of the Obamacare health care legislation, because the likely implication of that is that within fairly short order, there will be at least some government subsidy of some abortion services. Now, let's recognize it could be worse. We could be looking at a court completely invalidating the president's executive order. We could be looking at statutory precedent beginning to take authority over that executive order. We could look at the removal of that executive order. We could look at any number of legislative or political options that would put us in an even worse position than we are now, not only on the issue of abortion, but any number of other things. You know, I think one of the big picture issues we need to have in mind here is what Peter talks about. When he talks about Christians living before the fallen world, the secular world, in such a way that when people see us, they see our obedience to law rather than our disobedience to law, to rightful authority. And Paul's making a very similar argument in Romans chapter 13 when he writes about giving tax to whom tax is due, custom to whom custom is due, and honor to whom honor is due. In Romans chapter 13, verse 1, Paul writes, every person is to be in subjection to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God. You know, there are many Christians, I think, in America today who tend to overlook this, or at least to minimize it. But let's recognize, as much as we believe that the government can overreach, as much as we are concerned the government can do the wrong thing, as much as we are aware of how much evil governments can do, the biblical worldview tells us that the one thing worse than a bad government is no government at all. The situation of anarchy is one the Bible presents as a curse. The rightful organization of human beings by government, with the divinely ordained institutions of family and government, those are very, very important from a biblical worldview perspective. And one of the things the government has a rightful claim on is some level of taxation. You know, there's an old legal principle, which is the right to govern is the right to tax. And any government taxes one way or another, whether they call it a tax or they call it an excise or they call it a fee, I guarantee you every government taxes, because that's the only way the government can pay for services. You know, one of the moral principles that is involved, by the way, in Christians understanding the issue of taxes is that we are, like it or not, a part of this society. We are complicit in it, even when we say might not pay our taxes. We're still a part of the economy. We're still a part of the culture. We're still a part of the community. And that's why we need to remember that Jesus did not call his people to isolation, to isolate themselves and withdraw and separate from the larger society in terms of creating our own, say, Christian town or Christian village, where we'd pay our own Christian taxes to our own Christian tax authorities. Instead, the Great Commission means that we are to be distributed to the peoples of the earth. Accountable to the governments of the earth, where those governments have proper accountability and rightful claim upon us, in order that we would have the opportunity to reach people with the gospel of Jesus Christ, which is the preeminent issue. That doesn't mean that we should be satisfied with the political status quo. And when it comes in particular to what we're looking at with the Obama health care legislation, we are certainly not called upon to be satisfied with the current situation. There's every reason to believe that Christians can make a difference in terms of political redress. And even to go back to the issue of the American Revolution, in the American Revolution, let's remember that those responsible parties who called for the revolution did not call for no government. They did not call for anarchy. As a matter of fact, the American revolutionaries, our revolutionary forefathers, were desperately concerned that one of the things that might happen, an evil result of the revolution, would be anarchy. And that, of course, is a clear and present danger in any revolution. Just look at the French Revolution. But they were instead concerned to have ordered liberty on the other side of the revolution. And it was not a revolution against paying taxes. So many people have emailed me about that. Don't you know the American Revolution was about paying taxes? Well, paying taxes was one of the fuses that lit the fire. But the American revolutionary leaders did not say there will be no taxes, where we will pay no taxes. They said no taxation without representation. And the big issue there was that they came to the point of concluding that the government was not a legitimate government precisely because it was not functioning as a legitimate government. And again, that would be a completely different radio program. Was that a justified conclusion or not? Well, that's an issue that Christians living today can only theoretically now debate. We can't put ourselves back in 1776 and try to figure that out. But it is a good and healthy exercise to look at the conditions that we know existed in 1776 and say, all right, where would we come down? What would we do? What would Christ have us do? What are the Christian responses and Christian ways of thinking this through? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. On Twitter, several people have written back just to answer, saying that if indeed Christians read the Word of God, they'll come to understand that there's a proper respect for government. I'm just summarizing the things that were sent in. And that means that we do indeed render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's. And, you know, isn't it fascinating that of all the great teachings in the history of planet Earth and in the history of humanity that have related to government, none seems to be so memorable as that Jesus offered when people were trying to entrap him. And Jesus refused the trap, and is uniformly the case in the Gospels. Instead, he sprang the trap upon those who would entrap him. And he says, look, whose picture's on that coin? I don't see God's picture on that coin. God didn't have a picture. Whose picture's on that coin? It's Caesar's picture. Well, Caesar wants the coin so much you put his picture on it, then if he demands it back, you give it to him. The coin's a small thing. The infinitely precious and priceless thing is your soul. And your soul bears the imprint not of Caesar, but of God who created you. And you owe that soul to no Caesar, to no president, to no prime minister, to no prince. And, you know, that is a double-edged sword that we had better very much have in mind. And as Christians, one of the things we need to avoid is just quick reductionistic knee-jerk thinking when we answer a question and say, well, just render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's. Yes, that is the first thing Jesus said. But that was on the way to saying, in order to render unto God the things that are God's. You know, one of the key issues we need to keep in mind here is that we do not honor and obey Caesar for the sake of Caesar. We do not honor and obey the laws of the government for the sake of the government. We do not honor and obey the laws of the state for the sake of the state. We do so for the sake of the glory of God. Because God's glory is in his people recognizing the fact that his divinely ordained institutions are to be honored. And also, Christ's injunction to his church that when we are found, we are to be found doing the things that are lawful rather than wrong. There are limits on this, just ask Daniel. But folks, we're living in a time in which this issue just should remind us we have a responsibility. We are indeed the people. The people are the government. We've got a lot of work to do. Right back with more on the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Interesting discussion. Thanks to all who joined it, those who called the program, and those also who wrote in by email, Twitter, Facebook, you name it. Good old email at mail@albertmueller.com. The interesting thing I want to raise with you is the fact that I was really clued in to how many of you were concerned about this question by the fact so many of you wrote me. And in the aftermath of the passage of the Obamacare health care legislation, I received a flurry of emails from listeners to this program saying, will you talk about this? What should we think about this? That's encouraging to me. I'll tell you, nothing encourages me like knowing that you are thinking and listening and considering from a Christian perspective what it means that we should face something like this and figure out what as Christians we should do. that question that Francis Schaeffer taught us to ask, how should we then live? That is a big question for us, and it's a prime issue for this radio program. How do we think about living faithfully in the light of the demands of Christ and the power of the gospel in a fallen world? Lots has been written about this, and we'll be talking about it ongoingly, because after all, this is an issue that we face virtually every day, every week, for that matter, almost every moment. But it is interesting to know that there are a lot of Christians trying to think through this particular time in human history, this particular dimension of human history, where we are right now. What are the peculiar issues we face? What are the big questions as we look to the future that we think we're going to have to be dealing with? I want to hear from you what you think. Write me anytime, mail@albertmoeller.com, or just go to albertmoeller.com. That's M-O-H-L-E-R. Hit the mail button, and it will get to us. I'd love to know the issues that you see out there that you think we ought to be thinking about and talking about. Now, tomorrow's Ask Anything Wednesday, and I always look forward to that. I'm looking forward already to finding out what we're going to end up talking about tomorrow. I've looked at some of the questions already sent in by email and some of the questions that sent in by Twitter and Facebook over the last several days. Good stuff. But my favorite ones are always the ones that just come in at the last minute by telephone. So get ready tomorrow to call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. And I'm always glad to join in conversation with people who are trying to think about what Christ would have us to do, how Christ would have us to think. You know, the Christian worldview is based upon a very, very important presumption, and that is that we eventually live out what we believe. That's a frightening thing, a sobering thing to reflect upon, isn't it? When we actually see how people live, well, that's a reflection. That's what they really believe. Regardless of what they say they believe, how we actually live, the moral decisions we make, the decisions under pressure that we arrive at, well, that's when we discover what it is we really believe. The Christian responsibility is to figure out what we believe and make sure those beliefs are right in order that eventually our actions, our decisions will be right. It's good to do that together. I'll meet you tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. As always, thanks for listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.